Kia te reo, irirangi poho. You're listening to 95 BFM Breakfast. We're very, very excited for our next guest. We've got author and music journalist Liz Pelly on the line. Morena Liz, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for joining us. We're here to talk about your new book, Mood Machine, The Rise of Spotify and the Costs of the Perfect Playlist. Such a relevant topic with everything going on in the world at the moment. Really interesting. You've done a lot of work sort of diving into how streaming has shaped our listening habits, right?
Yeah, the book is sort of like a big picture look at the impacts of streaming on listeners and on artists. I think, you know, when I started working on it, it kind of seemed like those were separate conversations. At first, I even thought maybe it was two separate books, like the way streaming has impacted listening and the way streaming has impacted material realities for musicians. But as I worked on it, I realized they're really interconnected interests.
That's interesting, because I definitely think about it more in terms of like, you know, how little artists get paid and how hard it is to break through the noise versus how easy it is to have your algorithm create a playlist for you and not be sort of actively discovering. But how do you think those worlds intertwine with one another?
Well, I think that one of the reasons why streaming services want to have so much control over what listeners can hear on their apps, you know, is in order to direct listeners towards material that is cheaper for them to license. So one way of thinking about it is the same reasons why streaming services want to make music more boring is, you know, also part of what creates issues for musicians. You know, one of the things I write about in the book, for example, is the influence of algorithmic recommendations on our music taste and what it means for our listening to be so deeply surveilled. You know, I think even one of the descriptions of the book is like, how has music changed as it has become increasingly playlisted, algorithmic, and autoplayed? And obviously, there's a lot of concerns for listeners and the way in which, you know, algorithmic recommendation contributes to a more passive relationship with music. Some people from record labels over the years have described it to me like hyper-personalized algorithmic lean-back playlist culture has contributed to all music becoming more like emotional wallpaper. So there's, you know, that basic reality. But I also think that it kind of makes discovering and listening to music so frictionless that it kind of removes one, like the joy of searching for music that you might like. But I think there's actually a lot of benefit that comes from like listening to things that you don't like and thinking about why you don't like it. And yeah, like the same sort of tools that you know, make it easier and more frictionless for people to discover music are also tools that make it so that, you know, like, for example, I write a bit about the Daily Mix in my book. And the Daily Mix is like not only this playlist feature on Spotify that makes it really easy to just sort of accept hyper-personalized algorithmic music recommendations, but it's also an area of the Spotify interface that is impacted by this program called Discovery Mode, where artists are kind of nudged to accept a 30% royalty reduction in exchange for the possibility of algorithmic promotion.
Oh my God. So
good example of, you know, those kind of intersecting concerns.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know about that.
That's
a bit disturbing. There's so much to unpack. I think also it interweaves with so much of the discourse around big tech these days in terms of surveillance capitalism and stuff like this as well, because it's like, you know, it's that whole thing of, as listeners, you know, we're getting so much music for such a small cost, but also our listening data is sort of feeding back into the algorithm and contributing to just how far the reach is for streaming, eh?
Yeah. I also think with the rise of AI, this is only going to get worse. These kind of laid back, kickback music that you can just like chuck on the playlist, not really think about it being on in the background. Do you think AI is going to make this a whole lot worse?
Well, something I always say is that, you know, right now there's a lot of concern about generative AI music, and that's definitely important. It makes sense that musicians, rights holders, people who advocate on artists' behalf are really concerned about all of the really real threats that generative AI content poses to creative labor, especially when there's still so many open questions about, you know, the popular platforms for creating generative AI music and how they may or may not be using artists' work in their training data without their consent. Is this going to be a situation where musicians are operating in a marketplace where they're forced to compete against music that was like unfairly trained on their music as training data without their knowledge? All of that is like very real. But I also think it's important to kind of zoom out and remember that for the past 10, 15 plus years, different forms of what gets called AI have already been reshaping music discovery and helping to decide sort of like the winners and losers of the streaming economy via things like algorithmic recommendations, personalized feeds, and even like algorithmically generated conceptions of genre and context and, you know, all of these ideas about what music means and the way people kind of meet music. So I think that that's equally important because I don't think that anyone in the music industry is really counting on generative AI material just being on streaming services and users just stumbling across it and being like, wow, this is great. I love this generative AI music. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'm good with this. Like, I think what they're counting on is people hearing it in an algorithmic recommendation or in some sort of, you know, auto-played, auto-generated background music playlist and just not noticing that what they're hearing is generative AI music.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the interlocking potentials of both, you know, generative AI music beyond those platforms, but then people increasingly listening to music in automated ways that they're not either not really thinking about or like not really understanding why they're being recommended, what they're being recommended. I think it's, yeah, really both of those things.
A lot more sort of subtle and will just sort of become more encroaching over time, perhaps. I want to shift a little bit. I mean, it's looking pretty dire, the state of streaming. But there's been a lot of sort of initiatives from both artists and listeners to sort of boycott platforms like Spotify and move to other platforms like Tidal or resort to just buy music via Bandcamp or physical music. This whole thing of boycotting Spotify and moving to other streaming platforms that are supposedly better, is the whole economy just a bit like fucked, or are some better than others? Is there a lesser of the evils? What do you make of how we should move forward?
Yeah, you know, there's not really a point in my book where I go out of my way to say everyone should delete their Spotify accounts and like move to XYZ platform for multiple reasons. One, I think that the book is sort of more a critique of the streaming landscape and the streaming model, I should say, more broadly, that sort of uses the story of Spotify since it is the biggest and most influential streaming service. And then also I'm someone who like really believes that boycotts should be organized by mass movements, by unions, by solidarity organizations, not by like an individual self-appointing themselves to some sort of authority that can determine like when a boycott makes sense or not. But right now we definitely are seeing, you know, more and more musicians deciding for themselves that this is what makes sense. And I also obviously really support people, you know, acting upon their agency to make the decisions that work for them and not having their music. Like, I'm in a band, my band's not on Spotify. It's never been on Spotify because it's not really something that I think like makes sense for the type of music that I make or that I want to participate in as an artist. So yeah, what I do think I would love to see more of is like, and I'm not sure, you know, how things are looking in other parts of the world, but yeah, definitely like, you know, more organization amongst artists, like more of the like musicians, solidarity groups and unions kind of like responding with some sort of like cohesive plan for where we're pointing people towards. And then, yeah, artists, you know, not only talking about what platforms they are boycotting or leaving, but maybe giving more direction to their listeners and fans in terms of like where they actually would like to see them go. Because I think that's a question that a lot of people have, like, okay, like, you know, I'll leave streaming, but where should I go instead? But it really does look different for each artist. And artists, you know their fan bases best and know their own music scenes and communities best.
And I think as, you know, people, individuals, we can kind of clap back against Spotify in a way where if we rediscover the joy of actually curating your own music and actually finding out the story behind tracks and where it came from and who made it and for what purpose, I think on an individual level that's something we can do.
Totally. And I mean, you know, I really believe that our relationship with music is more meaningful when we're more intentional about it, that buying music directly from artists actually does sort of not only make a big material difference for artists, but also contributes to a more kind of dedicated fandom and listening relationship. I think being a fan of independent music has long involved sort of the work of being a collector, you know, maintaining your own collection of music, trading recommendations with your friends, making mixes for people, having conversations with people at your friends are at shows in your community about what they're listening to, paying attention to what bands are coming through town, who are people bringing on tour with them. Like there's, you know, so many ways in which just really tuning into local networks and the either like geographic region where you live or the communities that you're part of, like still kind of remains the best way to learn about new music, in my opinion.
Support your local. Yes. Oh, so insightful. Thank you so much. This is Liz Pelly speaking with us about her new book, Mood Machine, The Rise of Spotify and the Costs of the Perfect Playlist. You're actually coming to Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, for a chat with Martin Pepperell, who's a beloved New Zealand music journalist, on Tuesday, August 26th. We're excited to have you here. Everyone can head to Under the Radar to get tickets for that. It's from 6 p.m. next Tuesday, the 26th, at Whammy Bar. I think that's going to be a really cool conversation.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I can't wait.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks a lot. You too.